Inter-party talks involving the five executive parties in the British and Irish governments are due to resume at Stormont today. The negotiators expected to continue their consideration of issues connected to the legacy of the Troubles. So what do we expect to happen today? Security journalist Brian Rowan is with me. Brian, good morning to you.
Hi, you, Joel. Good morning.
So what's on the agenda today? What are we going to hear? What are we going to see?
A long day of talking today at Stormont, Joel. The legacy issues back on the agenda again. There was a document given to the parties last week, more a questionnaire-type document asking them to set out their positions on a number of the key past themes. So that would be an historical investigations unit, an information recovery process, what they think about an historical archive, the question of acknowledgement and victims' needs. Another paper with the parties as they go into today's talks in the past, someone telling me that it's much more about detail today than questions. The big challenge for these talks is how do you get from discussion to decision? So I think now down into some of the fine detail that the governments will be hoping will take them down the path towards some resolution on these issues. So the past, a big part of today's talking, I'm told by someone who'll be involved in today's process, they also expect to have some discussion around parading. And you'll know that that big issue is unresolved in North Belfast. The standoff continuing there on that interface at Ardoyne and Woodvale, and still no decision announced by the Secretary of State on this idea of getting panel, a new initiative to look at that situation in the north of the city.
Discussion to decision. I mean, that's a great phrase, Brian. And do you see any light, anything in any of these new documents and new papers that have been given to the parties that's going to make that any more likely?
Well, I think anyone who has read Eames Bradley or the Hassan Sullivan document, looked at proposals that have come from the Victims Commissioner, looked at reports from the Project Healing Through Remembering, worked on by academics. If they've read across that stuff, they're not going to be shocked by anything that's on the table in these talks. Joel, it's a big question now about do we want to have an investigative process in terms of the past? Do we want to have an information or truth recovery process to help families with answers? Is there merit in having an archive where everyone can record their story? What does everyone do by way of acknowledgement? And what is the best way of addressing victims' needs, including a pension for those injured during the conflict years? So we all know what has to be decided. What it's down to now is political will and leadership. And it's going to take an awful lot of political will and a big piece of leadership to get these issues over the line. So we're still, even though we're heading towards the end of November, I think we're still at a sparring stage in these talks, and we don't know if the parties are going to be up, not just for making decisions around the past, but many of the other key issues that are on the agenda in these talks.
And tomorrow, then, I gather, it's going to be the thorny issue of the structures of Stormont, number of MLAs and departments.
Yeah, that's under the heading of institutional reform. Also looking tomorrow at commitments that were agreed previously but haven't yet been implemented. In terms of institutional reform, you've got it right, Joel. It's about the number of MLAs. Do you reduce from 6 to 5 in constituencies? Do you restructure the constituencies in some other shape or form? Someone had told me, you know, one of the possibilities was around the new local government format. Do you reduce the number of departments? And there are others in the talks, Joel, who think if you're talking about institutional reform, sorry, there's just I'll let this vehicle pass me here and make a bit of noise.
As long as it's passing you and knocking over the top of you, Brian, we're okay.
Indeed, yeah, it seems to have gone. So basically, there are those who are of the view that it shouldn't just be about the number of MLAs and the number of departments. It should actually be about how the executive functions. Do we need an opposition? What are the north-south structures, and are they working in the best possible way? So institutional reform could go beyond mere numbers in terms of the numbers of MLAs we have, the numbers of departments we have, into that much wider discussion.
A lot of people, sceptics listening, will say, you know, that's asking the old turkeys to vote for Christmas.
Of course it is. And as I say, to go back to that point I made earlier, Joel, we're at a discussion stage and we're not at a decision stage. Let's see what everyone decides when it gets to the wire and when they have to make up their minds across a whole range of issues. The past, welfare reform, budgets, the shape of Stormont, parading flags, all of those things. I mean, this is an agenda that has many issues in its basket, and if they get one or two of them sorted, some people might consider that to be progress. If they get all of them sorted, I think many people would look at that as a miracle.
Brian, thank you very much. Security journalist Brian Rowan there outlining what the agenda is going to be for the next couple of days of talks. What about that specific question, though, of the number of MLAs? Do we have too many MLAs? 08459 555 678, the number to call. Former Speaker of the Assembly, Eileen Bell, with us this morning, along with Irish News journalist John Manley. I mean, Eileen, that specific point, you look at Scotland, what, 129? Wales, I think they have 60. 108 MLAs, too many for you, do you think?
Yes, I think
it would be generally by even the... That's a bad old line there, Eileen. We'll try and get you back. Hopefully John's on a better line. John, 108 too many for you?
Certainly, statistically, it would look like that, Joel. You know, you mentioned there the Scottish Parliament. I think that they have a 129 MSPs representing 5.3 million people, which works about, you know, one MLA per 40,000 people. Wales is about one Assembly member per 50,000. At Stormont, we have one MLA per 16,000 people, which would clearly point to the fact that we are, yes, indeed, over-governed. The discussions about reducing the number have been on the agenda and quietly discussed since back in 2010. I think Peter Robinson first mentioned, you know, reducing the number of MLAs along with reducing the number of government departments. It was even suggested at the time it could be cut as much as to 75. I don't see that coming, though.
Mm. What feels about right in terms of a number, do you think, for you, John?
Well, yes, I mean...
In other words, how many of them are you getting rid of?
I can see that the figure 108 keeps appearing before my eyes, Joel, but I think to be realistic, we're probably looking at reducing one in each constituency, which would take them down to 90.
Mm. What about this idea of restructuring the constituencies? Do you think that's too far off at this point?
Well, as in reducing them to 16?
Or even looking, you know, at the possibility, as was mentioned there by Brian, you know, looking at the new local government format and trying to make them sort of mirror each other?
I'd say that would be a long way off, and it would make an awful lot of money for consultants and different things. So I think the next stage simply would be the easiest option, I think, would be just to cut one MLA in each constituency.
The thing about it is, you know, it would be quite popular, I think, but certainly you get a lot of calls on some of these programmes, and they think, you know, there are far too many of them up there at Stormont, and that's the usual cry. It'd be popular with those people. It's already said the brand, you know, MLAs voting to have less opportunity for they themselves to be elected. I mean, it's hardly going to be populist on the Hill, is it?
Exactly. They're never really particularly effective at shining a torch on themselves. It's difficult for me to come on in any way and defend Stormont this morning. I imagine whenever they put the present structures together and set the template back at the time of the Good Friday Agreement, they imagined that our political process would be much more mature 16 years on. Unfortunately, that hasn't delivered. You know, and I think if we had effective government, you know, that was responsive, and I don't mean, you know, perpetually populist, then our form of extended democracy could be seen as the envy of the world. However, when it's ineffective and it's in a state of sort of permanent deadlock, then it's hard to defend what goes on up there.
Eileen Bell, is that a fair point? I think we've got you back on a yes. Better line. Is that a fair point that, you know, at the time of the Good Friday Agreement, and you looked 16 years on, people probably thought it'll be a more mature democracy, and, you know, this idea of having 108 MLAs, making sure that everybody, as far as possible, has an opportunity to be in here at the kickoff, we may not need to necessarily have that number of MLAs 16 years on.
Yes, indeed. I mean, there was discussion about that. And
So are you you shocked that we're still sitting with 108?
I'm shocked and angry. When I stood down as Speaker, I thought I was giving it over to a period of prosperity and peace for everyone in Northern Ireland. That isn't working out. And whenever we had the talks, the Good Friday Agreement, it was clearly discussed that 108 needed to be reduced in due course, that the whole voting system needed to be reduced in due course. Nothing has happened. They're still worried about their own positions, not about the people that they voted them in.
What would be the easiest way to do it then, Eileen? Would you change it, you know, from six MLAs to five per constituency, or would you look at what was mentioned in terms of the possibility of a whole restructuring even of the constituencies?
I think we need to look at that, yes, the whole restructure. The reason that the 108, the six, was agreed was because they wanted proper representation for everyone in Northern Ireland, and that was why they thought that was the best way to get it. But of course, this was trying to get away from one-party domination, one-party rule. But as you can see, that hasn't happened. So we do need to restructure that. We do need to have a proper voting system. We do need to make sure that things like petitions of concerns, etc., are properly dealt with, not to get people's parties, not to get their point of view across in favour of their point of view, not anybody else's.
So when you talk about the likes of those petitions of concern and voting in the Assembly, that's going back to what Brian Rowan was saying, that, you know, when people look at it, they say, you know, maybe not necessarily about numbers, it's about functionality. Would you go as far as to say that you know, at the moment, you don't see that it's functioning at all?
I agree. I mean, yesterday I was up in Parliament Buildings and I was talking to a number of MLAs. And I have to say, I saw the same gloom and despondency that I saw when we were in suspension. And that's not good for any MLA who really wants to do good for the people that voted them in. This is what we have to keep remembering, that they're up there because people voted them in to do work, and they're not doing it. And that we're supposed to be a legislative assembly, and it isn't happening.
Have a listen to George this morning. He's in Ballywalter. Morning, George.
Good morning.
Too many MLAs for you?
Certainly. In the case, it's almost jobs for the boys, but below that, we have two layers of councillors at the moment. The councillors themselves are taking up to about $25,000 a year out of it. Most of them seem to be permanent politicians.
Let's be honest, a lot of them are doing a lot of good work, so, you know, let's be honest here.
A lot of them are doing a lot of good work, but there's a lot of them take their turn on various committees, like the MEPs. And they've become a sort of second tier of professional politician waiting their turn at the big job in the Hill.
So
really lucky then, Westminster.
Too many layers of politicians, you feel?
Far too many layers.
John, what do you make of that? Too many layers of political representatives here this morning, according to George.
Yes, certainly I'd agree with that sentiment of George. You know, we were... we told it'd be a sort of a radical restructuring of our local government, and I think we've been sold some snake oil in that regard, and really we've just cemented another layer of bureaucracy and rearranged the furniture a little bit and reduced, you know, marginally reduced the number of councillors that represent us, you know, and just underlined how over-governed we are. And I think if they did something, that they approached it at Stormont, there would all be, you know, suggestions of radical change and different things, but at the end of the day, they would just tweak the system.
Is it time for formal opposition, do you feel?
It probably is, yes. I think that'll take some time to finesse and to get into legislation and different things, but certainly we need something to change the dynamic at Stormont somehow.
Eileen, are you back with us? I think he's dropped off there.
I'm not
sure if you heard the whole discussion. George and Ballywalter was saying that he felt there were too many layers of political representation.
Yes,
and then we were asking about, you know, around the idea of functionality. Have we reached the point now where we actually do need to look at a situation where there is a degree of formal opposition?
Obviously, that's very healthy to have people. I mean, take, for example, someone who I wouldn't always agree with his politics, but if you take the example of the TUD leader who's always there like a thorn in their flesh, and that's what you need. You need people to question what decisions are being taken, what things are being done, and as a result of that, you really do need to have someone there to keep them on their toes. And I have to say, Jim Allister does keep them on their toes, but on a bigger scale, you do need that. And it's just a question of making sure that the people who have been voted in there, as I keep saying to you, you use your politicians, and the people who are in there should be doing the work on behalf of the people, not on behalf of their party.
Many of them will say that that's what they're doing every day in, you know, constituency offices.
And a lot of, yes, and a lot of them are. But I'm talking about the big issues, about the issues that, Brian Rowan, you know, have said. We've had these problems for the last how many years, and we still haven't come to a decision. Why? Because when it comes to it, when Hardy comes to Hardy, they have to remember their party position and whether they'll get votes or not. And that's wrong. They should be worrying about what's happening on the ground and should be worrying about how they can make it better for the people who have gone through all the conflict. And
but is that not as much the fault of the electorate in that's the issues that they then must be still voting on?
Couldn't agree more. I think definitely, I keep saying, I mean, one of the things I do now is go around Northern Ireland and tell them to use their politicians, tell them to look at the politicians and to say, will they do a good job for us? And make sure that people cannot vote the way they voted in the past.
Okay.
If they automatically voted, if there was a Union Jack there, they automatically voted that way. If there was a tricolour, they automatically voted the other way. We all need to be, we all need to have encouragement and education. And unfortunately, the leaders in the Stormont do not do that.
Eileen, we'll have to leave it there. Former Speaker of the Assembly, Eileen Bell, and also Irish news journalist John Manley.